Welcome to The Leader's Edge, where we celebrate leadership and shine a light on the visionary leaders that are shaping the future. Hi, I'm H.R. Huntsman. I'm the founder of Leader's Edge, creator of Leader's Edge Performance Engine and Leader's Edge University. And I'm thrilled to bring you stories from leaders who are making a difference around the world. In each and every episode, we champion the innovative strategies, the courageous decisions, and the inspiring journeys of those who lead with purpose and passion. So whether you're looking to refine your leadership skills or you simply want to be inspired, my friend, you are in the right place. Today's guest is a powerful example of resilience, reinvention, and disciplined execution. At 18 years of age, Max immigrated to the United States from the former Soviet Union and began his career in corporate accounting and finance, only to realize it was not for him. He was building someone else's dream instead of his own. In 2002, he declared what he calls his Freedom Day on July 4th, 2002. He left corporate America to run a family landscaping business. He grew up from four people to 90-something to $4 million in revenue, and then lost it all in the 2008 recession due to poor financial visibility. Rather than quitting, he treated that failure as a masterclass in business ownership. And out of that lesson came a breakthrough insight into a broken, fragmented bookkeeping industry and a company that would eventually redefine it. Today, his firm is the preferred bookkeeping partner for more than 95 franchise brands across the United States. And he has since franchised the model himself, helping business owners pursue real freedom. That's time, money, relationships, and purpose. So he is the founder and franchisor of Books Keeping, a brand known for blending financial precision with a human first philosophy, and for proving that even boring industries can be built with heart, culture, and scale. So please enjoy my conversation with construction disruptor Max Emma. Max, I am fascinated by your story. And as I look through your history, I notice there are what I consider four, what I call times where you jumped off the cliff and did some courageous things. I'd like to go back to 18 years of age when you moved here from now the former Soviet Union. Tell me what caused that, what was stirring inside of you, and what would that lead to?
When I was immigrating from the former Soviet Union, it was about a year after Soviet Union collapsed. I was thinking that I'm leaving forever. So I was saying goodbye to my friends as I would never see them again. And that was hard for an 18-year-old. I was saying goodbye to my childhood. And I don't want to go into that. But yes, we did have happy childhood. And yes, we had a great time. And we didn't know that having 40 TV channels was better than having two TV channels, because that's all we had. That's all we knew. But it was an interesting process when I crossed the border with my parents and two grandmothers. I became an adult as soon as we landed at JFK, because I was the only one who spoke English a little bit, and I just became in charge. All of a sudden, they were depending on me. So I wasn't dependent on my parents. It changed, and I started working relatively soon. First, I had to go and learn English, which I came up with my own know-how to do it, because I was speaking a little bit, but it was very hard to understand when people were speaking at you. But I figured it out. I wish I could have trademarked it at the time, but I didn't. And later got my degree in finance and started the corporate life. And then that led me to everything I have now.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second. It's just an amazing story to me. I'm always interested and curious about the kind of courage that it takes to make that kind of leap, to start a company, in your case, to start a franchise. Do you see a link between those things, the courage it took to leave your home country at 18? That just seems amazing to me.
I'm not going to take credit for that. My parents did that, and okay, I just came along. But everything that I learned, actually, I strongly believe what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So all the experiences that I've had, I'm grateful, because they would lead to my next chapters. Yeah. And I know what I have now, it's not the finish line. I'm moving forward, and I'm sure I'm going to have other businesses on the road and on my way. I absolutely think that it gave me courage because when I come to a new country without the language, you don't have a choice but succeed. Because I'm going to tell you a story which I don't think I mentioned on any podcast, but I remember my very first job in the US. I was bussing the tables in a local family restaurant, and there was a guy who was coming there all the time. He was a security guard. He seemed old to me at the time. Now I think he might be 40, 45. And the guy was just getting a cup of coffee. And back then you could smoke inside. So he was smoking a half pack of cigarettes and having refills on coffee. And then one time he told me, "I see you work hard. Please get some education because I didn't do it. And that's all I'm doing right now. I'm probably making 50 cents more than you do."
Wow.
And that hit me hard. Not that I was not going to get education,
Yeah.
but I was like, you know what? I'm not staying here very much longer. And so that was just a temporary thing to get me to the next level. But I do remember still, it's been 33 years, and I still remember that day.
One of the greatest things I love about your story, as I've read and prepared for today, is what you mentioned earlier. You learn from every success, you learn from every failure, you learn from every decision. I think that's a great lesson for all of us. So you mentioned getting into corporate finance. What led you into that? You're new in the country, you're trying to build your way. Why finance?
When I went to community college and transferred to the university, I wasn't sure what major to choose. And then my older brother, gave me a great idea. He said, you know what? In finance, you can pretty much do anything in life, understanding the how the money works. And I'm like, okay, finance it is. So I went and I started studying finance and then got a job at Qualcomm, which was at a time the biggest employer in San Diego. They weren't a giant as they are now, but it still was a big company. I got an offer from them and I got an offer from Lehman Brothers. And then so I had this fork, and that's one of the first major decisions I had to make. Do I move to New York and start life on Wall Street, or do I stay in San Diego? And they offered me more money in New York, but they asked me if I'm ready to work 6 days, 15 hours every day. And I was 23, 24. I'm like, you know what? I'm not, because I was working full time and taking 18 credits to finish college as soon as possible. I'm like, I want to get some life. So that was the major decision. And again, I'm grateful for what I made, for the decision I made, because if I went to New York, I'm sure I would have a great story to tell you, but it would be completely different. And I don't know if it would lead me to my own businesses.
Yeah. So you're in finance, and what about that met your expectations? And what about that did you not like at all? And we're going to get to July 3rd in a second, but tell me about what was that like for you?
So it was a great experience. I learned a lot. However, the biggest problem for me was that I wasn't challenged enough. I figured out how to get my job done, and I was doing it, and I'm assuming I was doing it well because I was getting promoted. But once I finished, I had all the free time in the world. And I was coming to my manager, "Hey, do you have any projects?" And they would give me some projects. And then, "Hey, do you have any projects?" They would give me some projects. And after some time, they're like, "We ran out of projects. You just have to stay put. We need you for a week and a half, a month," because my latest job at Qualcomm, I was in charge of several international offices, like four or five. And so I had to close their months and review their financials before it would go to the next department and they can do the financial statements for the whole company. So without that, they would not be able to open it to close the months. But I only could do it when other processes were done. So like for the few weeks and months, I was completely bored. And that I was just like literally, and I was depressed. I was coming home, and my girlfriend at the time, who later became my wife, she just saw me like I was miserable. And that's what led me eventually into joining a small family business because I just was looking for the way out.
All right, let's talk about July 3rd, Freedom Day. And you talk about four freedoms, and I'll let you explain what those four freedoms are. But here we have just another one of those leaps that you took. And to go from a mastering your cushy job, and some would say, bored, man, just chill out. You're getting paid for doing nothing. But you went into entrepreneurship. That's a crazy leap, Max. Tell me about that.
So July 3rd, 2002 was the last day I ever worked for someone. So that's why July 4th of 2002 is my really Independence Day, and that's what I celebrate. So every time when I see fireworks, I mean, I celebrate the birth of the United States. Yes, this is my country, but for me, it's a double holiday because it was the road to something new. And look, I did use the knowledge that I got at Qualcomm because I was able to look at financial statements. I knew what to look for. And I went into construction business, which I knew nothing about, but I did get a construction license. I passed the exam, actually two exams. It was pretty tough. I got the business part done easy. The specialty where I had to know the names of bunch of plants in Latin and English and know the difference between them. I was like, oh my God. So I had to go back to school and learn. And I remember I hated it, but that led me to learn something new. And I'm like, okay, it's a business. It doesn't matter what I'm doing, it's landscaping now. And so we started growing that and went from 3 employees to 96 employees.
Wow.
I never had anybody reporting to me before, so that was an interesting experience to work with people. And that I'm still grateful that I had this opportunity because I do have teams in all of my businesses right now. And again, that's the first time I had to learn by doing it how to be a good boss. And I don't know if I'm good, I'm sure I'm still learning. How could be a better person? How could be a better leader?
Let's talk about your four freedoms. You talk about, let's see, time, money, relationships, and purpose. Which of those four do you think most company owners misunderstand or misuse?
I think they're all interrelated. So I'm a part of an organization called Strategic Coach, and Dan Sullivan came up with these four freedoms. And once I learned about them, it clicked in my head that this is the purpose of my life, is to get these four freedoms and help others to get these four freedoms. Look, if you don't have a freedom of money, if your financial situation is not that good, you probably can't really spend time on building the relationship because you always have this in your mind. Okay, I have to feed my family, I have to worry about it. So you have to take care of that. But if when this is done, then you probably thinking, okay, I have people helping me and I have time. What am I going to do with this time right now? How am I going to use the best? And then freedom of purpose and freedom of relationship. It's not just the relationship with your significant other, but it's relationship with your kids, relationship with
Sure.
your parents, relationship with your peers, relationship with your employees, I mean, your friends. For me, all freedoms are important. I think the biggest misconception, and I was guilty as charged, I was thinking that money is the purpose in life. And that's, I had this number in my mind, and I'm like, I'm going to get there. This is the purpose. And then I'm going to start enjoying my life. Then I'm going to start traveling. Then
Right.
I'm going to start living life. And that was a huge mistake.
Okay.
I'm very happy I figured it out. Better late than never. And I have zero regrets that it took me a while to get there because if I got it right away, my journey would not be the same.
Let's go back to you scaling your company from a handful, I think you said 4 to 96 in just a few years. I've grown several businesses from scratch to large. What would you say, Max, at what scale did you say this requires a different kind of leader? Is it leading 10 versus 2 or 30 versus 10? Or at what point do you say this is the hardest stage and why?
For me, the harder stage was when I did not know the names of
Yeah.
all of my employees. Because
Right.
when I had a team of three and then five, seven, 10, I knew who they were. I knew the names of their kids because sometimes they would bring them to work. And then I knew the name of their spouses. I knew all of that. And at some point, like visually, I knew, okay, that's one of my guys. But I didn't know everybody in the field. Obviously, I knew everybody in the office. I knew the foreman. But at this point, it becomes challenging because it's not personal anymore. And
Yeah.
I'm like, am I going back to corporate life, which I ran from. So that was the biggest challenge, the combination of the two, like being an entrepreneur and running a company with close to 100 employees.
What did you do about that?
I just went along, to be honest with you. I did not sit down and think about it. I'm just,
Okay.
okay, it's happening. But the this growth, it was great until the recession hit in
Yeah.
08, 09, and it was a landscape construction company. We were doing track homes, and they just stopped building track homes. But we had probably 20 trucks at a time, cranes, all the equipment, which obviously we financed, and we had to pay for it. So we
Yeah.
had all this equipment and close to zero income coming. And we didn't have a choice but declare the bankruptcy. And also, because it was personally guaranteed, I had to do the personal bankruptcy as well. So it was one baby at home and one on the way. That was scary, to say the least. I still remember hanging the key. I paid every employee. I gave them the last paycheck. And then I hanged the key on the storage unit. And I just walked away and I said, that's it. There's nothing I can do at this point. So that was scary. But this is the first time when me and my wife, who co-founded bookkeeping later on, we just said, we wish we had a bookkeeping company that would tell us that we're going to this situation. Because look, I was a village idiot with bachelor in finance. She had master's in accounting. So she definitely understood. I understood finance and accounting. We were just so busy growing the business, we never analyzed that. And we probably could have figured out that recession is coming and we are just have too much equipment and we need to do something about it. But we didn't. And now looking back, I'm grateful because at that point, I pretty much just stopped. I'm like, I have to figure it out. I don't have a choice. To be honest with you, I almost gave up. I was looking, started looking for a job, but I got lucky. No jobs were available. It was 08 or 09. There was absolutely nothing. Nobody was hiring. Everybody was letting people go. I'm like, that's not an option. So I have to start another company. I started another business, was more successful, sold it. And while we were running that business, the idea of bookkeeping finally came because we were getting quotes from other bookkeeping companies for our business and we did not get a good quote. We didn't get a good service. And we're like, it's time to fill the gap. And that's how the company started.
This inflection point to me right here is fascinating. Obviously, it's important to your story. Again, I was reading your story and I thought, I wondered what I would be like right here, where you took what many would consider a failure and you had some internal shift. And you said you had no choice, but you could have done all kinds of things. You could have just gotten hardened or given up, or like most people do, but you didn't. You started now two more companies. What's the biggest lesson that you could pass on to other entrepreneurs from this inflection point right here, Max?
Look at anything that happens in your life as an opportunity.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the dramatic thing, God forbid, losing somebody who is close to you, business stuff. Okay. It didn't work out. What can I do with that? And how can I move forward? What can I learn from this experience? I now looking back, it taught me a lot, but you can only connect dots looking backwards.
Right.
So now I'm like, yeah, that was great. At the time, it felt really scary,
Sure.
and I didn't know what to do. And we understood that my wife was in the middle of pregnancy, so she couldn't really get full-time job either. So it was a hard 3 4 months financially as well, because we had to sell the house
Yeah.
and rent way smaller place and figure out how to survive.
I love gritty, resilient stories like this. They really resonate with me. Now, you didn't just start bookkeeping. You weren't just an entrepreneur. You could have just started bookkeeping and had a nice business, but you eventually franchised it. Talk to us about how you went from an entrepreneur to a franchisor.
So there are several ways I can explain it. I think the best one, I got bored. It definitely the theme, not bored with the business, but for me it was like, okay, I got it. Now I understand how to move it forward. I had a team of people. Okay, I have 20 employees, however many we had at the time. If I do this and this, we're going to get to 50, 60 employees. But I wasn't challenged enough. I wanted to learn new things. So while we were doing the bookkeeping, bookkeeping was the local San Diego company. We had local businesses. I was doing networking while still running the other company before we sold it. So I was doing two businesses at a time, pretty much doing the business development. And my wife was doing the actual bookkeeping until we hired the first employee. But I was just doing it local. And then by accident, we got into franchising. We started doing bookkeeping by one franchise. And then that led for me to go to some franchise expos, meeting other franchisors. Then it was two franchises, three. And then I just started liking being around these people. So I tell the story all the time. I personally have seen the CEOs of two competing brands that are each have 2,000 plus units, sitting at the bar at one of the conferences, drinking whatever they were drinking and talking. They are fighting for the same franchisees, same talent, but yet they are living in a world of abundance. It's enough for both of us. It's enough for everybody. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And another story, I personally stopped the CEO of the brand that has probably a few thousand units at the hall on one of the conferences and started asking him questions. The guy stopped. He talked to me for 20, 30 minutes. At the end, I was just starting. I think I had one unit or maybe zero. He gave me his cell phone number. He like, look, if you ever have any questions, text me, call me. I'll be there. For what interest he had at me? Zero. And he was in the restaurant business. So definitely has nothing to do with bookkeeping. But that's the feeling that you get when you're in franchising world. And I've been joking that I told myself when I grow up, I want to be like one of them. And I guess I've grown up and I started franchising.
How important is who you hang around? How important is that to you?
Oh, absolutely. People around you, they make, in my opinion, 70% of who you are. And look, I've always tried to be with people who are more successful than I am and learn from them. I was still having this issue that a lot of businessmen have. Why are they hanging out with me if I'm not where they are? But I guess I was giving them something that they were looking for. And still, I'm learning. Whenever I have a question right now, I call somebody who's done it before, who grown the company to multi-location, who eventually sold it to private equity. So I'm like, okay, if you had this challenge, what would you do? Sometimes I call several people and then I still make up my own mind. So I'm not just doing what I'm told to do. I believe anybody has to make up their own mind. But I don't know what I don't know. So I want to hear what other people would do.
I fully agree with this. I'm giving a talk next week in Reno, Nevada to a big HR conference. And one of my first points is who is more important than what? And I'm emphasizing this, who you hang around, who you surround yourself with is critically important. It's up to you to decide the kind of people and the level of people you hang around. So let me clarify this for listeners. So you have bookkeeping is a bookkeeping business that I could hire, but you also have bookkeeping as a franchise I could buy.
Absolutely. So there are two businesses which are interrelated, and I have teams in both of them, but they are pretty much doing both things because we help our franchisees to get clients. So the franchises that we do bookkeeping for eventually become clients for our franchisees. But the biggest difference between the two, then in bookkeeping business, my client is a business, small business that we do bookkeeping for. In the franchising business, my client is my franchisee. So it's completely different target market. So I
Got it.
have to really go with what my franchisees want. They're the ones selling bookkeeping, not me. So that was a mind shift when we started doing that.
So, do you see yourself as a bookkeeper now or as a franchisor?
So I've never seen myself as a bookkeeper because if I would do your bookkeeping, you would never get it done. So my team is threatening me that, Max, if you misbehave, we're going to make you do the QuickBooks. And look, jokes aside, I've done it 25 years ago when I wasn't more than that. When I was in college, I just had a side job working and helping a small company. But I have no idea how QuickBooks works right now. And that's bookkeeping We are now a national partner of Intuit, and I was told by them that last year we're number 8 in the country of number of subscriptions managed and sold. So we're a pretty big partner for them. But I have no idea how to, I still don't, how to turn on QuickBooks Online. And I'm not ashamed to say that because this is not my strong
No.
suit. You don't want me to do accounting. I'm gonna kill myself really fast because I just can't be in front of a computer. I have to be in front of people. I have to communicate. I have to travel. It's different. My team, people who are in operations and support and accounting, I joke back to them. I'm like, if you misbehave, I'm going to put you in charge of sale. And they're like, we're going to quit the next day because they absolutely don't want to talk to people.
Sure. So you say franchisees are business owners, but not entrepreneurs. Why does that distinction matter so much to you? And who should not buy a franchise?
Any franchise, and doesn't matter if it's bookkeeping or not, has a blueprint, has pretty much like a set of rules that you have to follow. So I, Max, personally, would be a horrible franchisee because I would always find the ways how to do it better, and I would be always irritating my franchisor. So
Sure.
somebody who ran their own business and they want to continue doing it and they have a lot of ideas, they probably not going to make a good franchisee. I believe that what makes a franchisee of any business an entrepreneur when they have multiple locations. Once they get location two and location three, yes, then you become entrepreneur because you probably cannot run all of them yourself. So you're hiring other people. And then you look at all these businesses and what if I sell location number two and I buy location number four? Anybody who is buying a franchise can become entrepreneur. Not everybody is becoming one, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. I see what you're saying. Now, you talk about bringing humanity to bookkeeping, that you're the cool bean counters. What do you mean by that?
Look, bookkeeping is boring, and this is a known fact, and a lot of people don't want to do it. I don't know if, but there is a shortage of accountants right now in the United States because kids are actually not going for this major. My friends who are CPAs, we don't do any taxes. We're not CPAs, even though some of my franchisees are, and they just bought a bookkeeping franchise to add it into their portfolio of their tax practice or what have you. But we are not CPAs. So my CPA friends, they're like, we have a hard time hiring people. We need right now to hire three or four, and they're just not coming out of college. Or
Okay.
they're coming out, and there are so few of them that the big four just steal them because they give them all the benefits and everything. And smaller CPA firms just cannot compete. It is definitely an issue. And part of the issue is that just people look at bookkeeping as the at accounting as the boring function. So the way we do it, we are making bookkeeping cool by giving life, by challenging employees, by having a great environment. We work hard, but we play hard as well. I do have employees in multiple countries, and I try to visit one or two of them a year, and then whenever I do, we are having a great time. We can go and do karaoke. There is a video somewhere of me doing Material Girl song, which I know is going around the company. They're still not showing it to me, but fine, because they see that I'm human and I don't let them to call me boss. I don't let them to. When we are talking, we're having fun. We are equals. When it comes to work, yes, we have to take it serious because clients are expecting us to. But it doesn't mean like we don't have this org chart. It's different. So Elena, who is the co-founder of Bookskeeping, and full disclosure, she's now my ex-wife, but yet we're working together, and she's an instrumental part of the company. She's a chief people's officer. She looks at the company as the human body, and each function is different. It's a heart, it's a lung. And that's what we teach our employees. So again, it's not an org chart you report to this year. It's different functions of the body. And look, you can't live without a heart, but you also can live without the lungs. So you need that, and you need the head and everything else. So that's how we're doing it. Culture is huge for bookkeeping. When we interview potential franchisees, they think that they're shopping us, but we're shopping them as well. And we've said no to many people because they would not just be a good match. They would come in and be like, son, let me tell you how I'm going to run my franchise. Not going to work. I'm not going to have a bad apple to break the whole system.
What are you looking for? Tell me if people want to apply to be a franchisee, what are the top three things that you say, H, they got to be this?
They have to be coachable.
Okay.
They have to have a ambition to grow the business, because if somebody just want to make this money and live a comfortable life, then they're buying themselves a job. This is really an expensive job to buy, because yes, we will help them with training, we'll help them to find employees, we can help them to find clients, but that's not the people that we are looking for. I'm looking for somebody who's okay. What if I hire two more people? What if I do this and I do that? Can I grow the business? And look, at some point they might want to sell it. That's totally fine. I don't believe that you have to hold on to the business for 30, 40, 50 years for the rest of your life. When we do the training, the first question I ask, what is your goal? And I have a couple of franchisees who told me, I want to sell the company in 10 years. I want to grow and sell it. And I respect that. So that's one path. But somebody who's saying, I'm seeing myself doing it for 15 years and I want to get to this level, that's a different path. And I respect both. We just have to take a different strategy to get there. And look, at some point, a few years ago, I realized that bookkeeping is not a good match for everybody. And that's when I started the franchise brokerage. So that's the third business that I have, where I can help people to find a franchise out of 630 that I have in my portfolio. And it's from burger place to insurance business to payroll, I mean, bookkeeping and anything in between. And I actually don't get paid until somebody buys a franchise. Then I get commission from a franchisor. And this is awesome because before I was like, you're not a good match. Good luck to you. I left it at that. Now we take them on a journey and see people be successful in other businesses. They don't have to be, all of them don't have to be bookkeepers. I'm totally fine with that.
What's next for you? Are you bored now?
No, not bored now because I have goals that I'm trying to achieve, but eventually I will get bored, and it's just probably going to be 3 to 5 years from now
Yeah.
when I have full teams in place and the businesses are self-managing businesses that I can just be like a true CEO and just oversee it and not be involved day to day. And at that point, yes, I'm sure something else will come up. But right now, I have responsibility to my franchisees to give them the support that they need. And look, right now we're the only bookkeeping franchise in the US, so I know we have a room to grow. It took us a while to get the name out there to make sure people know who bookkeeping is, and then realize that we are sticking around. Because the first couple franchise expos I went to, people were just passing by. Okay, it's not a bookkeeping company. They'll be gone next year. And then I was back next year. And then I was back next year. And then finally, people were like, you've been around. Let's talk. And then they would give us business.
Okay.
You have to keep pushing. You can't just give up because a lot of people would go to a franchise show, see they got zero clients, and give up. And that's the biggest mistake. I'm like, keep doing it. Find the avenue that you want to push. If you want to go into HR market and push bookkeeping to HR consultants, then keep going to the conferences. Make sure you know the players. Make sure they know you. Make sure they trust you. So that's what I do. And it makes it fun. But I want to be very clear. Work is not everything. I love to travel. I love to living life. I'm not doing it when I retire in 10, 15 years, whatever.
Okay.
I'm doing it now, and it's equally important. And that's part of our culture is work-life balance. We're actually changing it to life-work balance.
Very good. A couple final questions. Time's running out. If you were to talk to a 22, 23-year-old coming out of college or trade schools, and they say, Max, I want the freedom you're talking about. I want to start my own company. What's the one piece of advice you would give that young lady or that young man to be an entrepreneur or a business owner?
You don't have to pay your dues. And what I mean by paying the dues, when I was going to college, I was told you have to go work for somebody, get the experience, and then open your business. I'm sorry, but I believe it's bullshit. You don't have to work. I'm not saying that it's not a good path. It's a great path, but it's not the only one. I'm seeing a lot of successful franchisees who bought franchises out of college, whether it's a painting franchise or a moving franchise. It's actually designed for younger generation because they actually eager and they can go and get new clients and they can help to build the teams. And I'm seeing them being very successful. You're not going to be able to buy like a CPA franchise if you're just fresh out of college because they're looking for CPAs to buy it. Bookkeeping, I would consider somebody who has accounting degree to buy a bookkeeping franchise fresh out of college. So my biggest piece of advice, you do not have to pay the dues.
Just get out there, get started.
Just get, if that's your calling. Look, if you want to work for somebody, you can do it for the rest of your life and you'll be very successful. CEO of Disney doesn't own Disney, but he's making more money than probably most of the people I've met in my life combined. Okay? So I'm not saying this is really bad thing. It's a great thing. So you don't have to become an entrepreneur. You can be a career executive and do really well, but you just have to decide what you want to do in your life. And there is no right or wrong.
Good. Max, how can people get a hold of you if they want to join your team as a bookkeeper or start a franchise?
So the best way is to find me on franchisewithmax.com. And when people go there, they'll be able to choose if they want to talk to us about bookkeeping, if they want to talk about bookkeeping franchise, or if they want to just get some consulting about possibly buying a franchise. So franchisewithmax.com, or they can find me on LinkedIn, Max Emma.
Thanks, Max. Really appreciate your time, my friend. I wish you the best and let's stay in contact.
Thank you. It was great. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. That's it for today's show. Thank you for joining us on The Leader's Edge. I hope today's conversation with Max inspired you to lead with even greater purpose and impact. My big three takeaways from my conversation with Max are these. Number one, all losses are lessons. Max has taken every hard setback, from immigration to the United States and learning a new language and his own business failure and personal bankruptcy. He's taken every hard setback in life and turned it into a masterclass for his own better future. I love stories of resilience like that. Number two, who matters more than what? He picked up in the conversation again and again and again. He surrounded himself with people that are leading at a higher level and a higher level of success than he was. Who you surround yourself with is key. I've learned this in my own life. And I think every great leader that I've ever connected with always seeks to learn from those who are ahead of them on the journey. And number three, this was a surprising one. He said, "Don't earn your stripes." What he meant by that is, if you feel led to be an entrepreneur or business owner, you don't have to put in 10, 20 years to building someone else's business. Get started. There are so many opportunities for you to just jump in and get started. Don't earn your stripes. So listen, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I'd love a five-star review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more leaders just like you. That's the whole point, is empowering leaders around the world. Please stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, leadership insights, and updates on future episodes. Check us out at yourleadersedge.com and follow us at Leaders Edge Podcast on all major platforms. So until next time, keep pushing your boundaries. Keep leading at the edge. I'm HR Huntsman. I'll see you soon.